Chapter 1. The winds carried dust to every part of the great cities, left it on roofs and window sills and uneven streets. It scoured glass to an iridescent glaze. The city covered the entire earth, if people think of the earth as where I live. At night, the wind sang through the abandoned upper floors of buildings with a noise like oboes, and this erratic music could be heard at street level, where people walked in the heat to their work in offices and in the recycling dumps and the cement works, to work on the pumps that kept the water, contaminated with gypsum from Silurian seas, flowing through the pipes. In the interstadial spaces between the borders of gerrymanders, prisoners painfully attended the cactus fields and the soybean fields. There was not enough pressure to move water any higher than 4 stories, and so upper stories had to be abandoned and demolished, and new, dust-leaking roofs built over the remains. Television reports on demolitions were very popular. The city covered mountains. Houses were fastened to the steep places, and they sprang up in 4-story shells along abandoned watercourses and the sinks of vanished springs. The city plated the entire planet, if you thought of the planet as my neighborhood, a place where nobody was ever left alone. On a hot, dry afternoon, a 4-year-old girl was taken out into a crowded street by her parents and abandoned. It was in the Sisson's Bend neighborhood. The girl knew by her parents' manner that something remarkable was about to happen, but she thought, as they were walking along, that it would have something to do with shoes or maybe a musical toy. Her parents had given her a coin purse of red leather. In it were 5 coins and a note, and another piece of paper on which were drawn the constellations of the Big Dipper, Cassiopeia's chair, and the North Star. Her mother handed her the paper and said, "Look to the North Star, and we will always be there. You'll be lonely for a while, but things will get better." Then her parents disappeared in the crowded streets as if they had been teleported somewhere. The girl stood there without knowing what to do. A slow, crawling fright rose inside her, and it increased with every moment as passers-by bumped into her and looked down at her briefly and then hurried on. The girl stared at the crowd as if she had been electrocuted with some kind of cunning electricity that could not be felt unless you moved, and so she tried to stand still with the purse and the 2 papers in her hand, but she was knocked down and then scrambled to her feet with gritty hands and stood carefully unmoving again. The street was choked with people moving to new locations, carrying children and bags of clothes and solar casserole pots and kerosene cans piled on carts that wove through and around the overloaded buses. The buses ground along in first gear, and the little electric buddy cars were loaded with 3 and 4 passengers and their roped suitcases. As far as anyone knew, the world had become nothing but city, and the rains had failed for a century. They were on the move because the water faucets had gone dry in 1 distant part of the city, but were rumored to be springing clear and full of pressure out of the standpipes in another. These were ordered migrations, and agents in tracksuits paced alongside them. The man of the neighborhood watch saw the girl and frowned. He came toward her. She was taken to an orphanage where she lived with other abandoned children like herself. She was given porridges and beet tops and 1 quart of water a day. She sat with the other children in front of a television in a battered wooden chassis. The blue light sucked up her attention like a pull motor. After a week or so, she went blind. She could not see the eye doctor, but he could see her, and he lifted her chin and stared into her green-gray blind eyes, her auburn hair sliding in planes, and then said, "This is going to sting." The daycare attendant said it was for a blood test. The doctor said he was sure it was vitamin A deficiency. Maybe she was especially sensitive to vitamin A deficiency, or maybe she had been weaned too early and was raised on bulgur wheat and pastas. Before long, after the paperwork was approved, she would have a prescribed daily dosage of retinyl palmitate. But retinyl palmitate was synthesized from retinol, and retinol had to be prepared and transported at very low temperatures in an oxygen-free atmosphere, and the industrial unit that made it went through constant breakdowns in refrigeration. The gas-packing apparatus frequently blew its tubes, and delivery by truck was rarely on schedule owing to ruptured tires. In the meantime, she must have animal foods. She should be served eggs and cod liver oil and milk. And so he went away. An attendant patted her shoulder and said it wouldn't be too long before she could watch her favorite programs again. And just that brief touch made the girl's heart grow full, and she did not feel so desperate.